I'm Mary and I'm alcoholic. Friday night, girl stock. I don't know about you guys, but I never thought my life would become Friday night surrounded by the most gorgeous women in the world, can I just say? Because I would have, you know, been fighting and clawing against you at that point, you know what I mean? We were competition, you were cuter than me and skinnier than me and la 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 la, on and on and on. And my Friday nights would never look like this. By 9 o'clock on Friday night, I had to, that was my night, man. It was my night if I could hold off to Friday. So I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. I love Girl Stock, and I want to thank Lee so much for inviting me back and for his gentlemanness and his service to us, and my beautiful friend Beth for getting in line and getting me coffee, and Luann for picking me up in the shuttle at the airport, and Amanda for giving me the 5-hour hug in the lobby when I first got here, and it was just like, I'm home, you know, I'm home. I mean, not Debbie D is in the front row, and she's listening to me. What? How did I get here? You know, okay, let's qualify first. Marion W is actually flipped upside down now, and it's Marion M as of April 9th. Yeah, 62 years old and just got married. So there's hope out there, ladies. Just catching my stride. The best is yet to come. You know, sobriety date, November 11th, 1989. And I have a home group in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Oh my God, I can't look at her. She's like the Marilyn Monroe of AA. And I heard you so many years ago in early sobriety, and it was like my sponsor's Polly P. And I would look at these women, and I'm like, how can I be like that? You know, everything I ever learned about life, ladies, happened in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you so much for the wonderful foundation you gave tonight, Diana, on 1 and 2. That powerless. And you're absolute. Our stories. You know, oftentimes we can get asked to speak on this step or speak on, you know, a spiritual experience or, you know, whatever, emotional sobriety and these things. And, you know, I'll get a call and they'll say, they'll say, well, what do you want? I'll say, what do you want me to talk about? And they'll say, my story. And, oh, I'll say, just my story? I've said that before. And our stories, you and me. I mean, it's Debbie Davis. She's got some story, you know. I mean, Beth, I mean, heroes in this room. I mean, on and on. I mean, Leslie and my beautiful friend Amy, who wanted me to go in the urinal in the men's bathroom. She's trying to cut in line in the ladies' room, that is the men's room that's now a ladies' room, and she goes, you got a podium call now. What some of us will do to get just a cheap shot and get in the front of the line, I don't know, it's still kind of there. But my first year at Girl Stock, it was, I get screwed up on the years a little bit, you know. But I remember my first time here. And I had a room to myself. And I sat in the back row. See, you can do this. I'm 32 years sober, but you can do this with 25 years. You can sit in the back of the room and feel alone and you're not enough. And all that stuff. Girls, I'm you. I'm that. I'm that. I bought a pretty dress. Swear to God, this is embarrassing, so don't tell her I thought this, but I knew Debbie Davis was going to be here, and I'm rooming with Leslie, and, you know, I got to have it going on. And I was sweating and shopping yesterday like crazy. And this pertains to step three, right? I was finally like, God, you got to help me find a dress, and you got to help me find one now, man. Because this is not happening, you know. I knew I could go to Macy's and I'd find something, my little plug for Macy's. But what do I do? Oh, Town Center Mall. I got to walk through the whole thing first, get super sweaty, get super burnt out, get super, and then decide when I go to Macy's that maybe I should pray about it. Isn't that what we do? We bang our head up against the wall first. I've done it continuously and continuously. So if you're new, you're probably going to God quicker than I am. I mean, I don't know. 2 hours later, I'm at the mall. And Debbie likes my dress. So, so I'm cool. And Leslie likes my shoes. So, you know, so I'm happy. And sometimes what that comes from, I know this is a really long introduction, but it really does have to do with God. I swear. And Leslie's rooming with me, right? So she sees me crazy earlier because that's how I am. I'm married to a wonderful, incredible Italian stallion who gets to hear me before a talk And Lee just said the thing that Peter says to me every time. You know, I want to show up shiny. I want to show up. I want you to think I'm enough. I want you, you know. Because what do us alcoholics do? I got to be, Clancy says it, right? Said it, God rest him in the big meeting in the sky. Got to be treated extra special just so I can feel average for a minute. Because I don't feel like I qualified. I listen to Diana and I'm sitting there and my head's going like, oh, she's just, oh, and you're going to follow this? Great. You know, I'm screwed. And Lee says to me, Lee leans in and Lee grabs my hand and Lee says, just give him the good stuff. You know what that is? I think that's how you said it. He said, just give them you. And I don't know. And you guys, that's the constant theme of my life. If you guys are anything like me, which I know you are, if you're an alcoholic like me, when we, you know, selfishness and self-centeredness, that's, we think it's a root of our troubles, that we must be rid of self or it has the power to kill me. That's a pretty strong statement. I need power to pull this off, guys. I need power to not go in the urinal on the, you know. Just teasing, but kind of not. I would have done that in the day, you know? Lack of power is my dilemma. With power, no dilemma. Deep down inside, every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. And my beautiful, you know, I was born and raised in Bellingham, Washington, and the land of hippies and Birkenstocks and socks and, you know, that's how I rolled. And I got some Michael Kors platforms on tonight, you know. Come a long way, baby. You know, but, you know, that little girl that I was, that little girl that was raised in that little town with six kids and that wasn't enough, you know, my mom, you know, it's crazy. You know, we said a lot in these rooms these days, you know, we live life forward and we understand it backwards. And I was raised in a drunken alcoholic family with three boys and three girls, and there was neglect and there was no food and the house was real gross. And those kids in the school bus didn't come to my house. Oh no. Don't let them come to my house. But I went to their house. And I'm a little girl with, goes to school and the teacher combs my hair and she washes my face and mom's gonna get up and she's gonna make dinner for dad, because dad's working in construction and he's a laborer and he's, you know, calloused hands and calloused feet and driving cab on the weekend. And you know, I hated that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hated it. I'm named after my mother. My name's Marion. My mom's name was Marion. And I had a great aunt Marion. And my great aunt Marion called me Marion the Turd. I was the third. You know, and I used to hate that. The phone would ring and it was always big or little, big or Marion, is Marion there, big or little, and I was so ashamed and I was so embarrassed of that. And my dad, you know, sixth grade education, his dad died when he was, you know, he was 8 years old and eight kids and all that stuff. None of that stuff makes me an alcoholic. That's not the point. The point is that I have struggled in my life to feel enough, to feel worthy of God. See, I go to those girls' houses with the little bows in their hair and the Barbie dolls and the bikes in the garage and, oh my God, and the white picket fence. And see what happened back then? There was these twins. Someday I'll see them again. And I'm going to thank them, maybe. I think. Karen and Kathy. I won't say their last name, just in case they ever make it in the rooms. I'd love to sponsor one of them. But, you know. But they were these God girls. They were God girls. And everything about them was shiny and pretty and perfect. And then there was me. There's no God in my house. There's no God, you know, there's no God in my house. And the God that I grew up understanding was, you know, with these six brothers and sisters, and I knew there was love. This is the point I was trying to get to about 20 minutes ago. But my mom adopted, my brother brought home a friend in sixth grade, and my mom adopted that kid. We didn't even have enough for the six, but she threw another potato in the pot and adopted another kid. So I know when I look back on that today, life forward, understanding it backwards, that there was love in my house. There was love. And my mom was doing better for me and better for us than she ever got done for her. And through Alcoholics Anonymous and great, great, great sponsorship, and some little outside stuff. I couldn't be prouder than to be Marion the Third. Turd, whatever. I'll take it all day long. My dad was a World War II veteran and he'd make this metal coffee pot and he would, you know, sit and talk about the boys. All those boys, you know. And he'd go drive cab on the weekends and grab if he could get an extra shift. And this is how I know my dad loved us. Seven kids. Lunch. This is really going to show that I'm 62. Is he'd line the quarters up on the kitchen counter. It was 35 cents for hot lunch. When we could get hot lunch, that was a big deal. 35 cents. Pile of them on the counter. My dad loved me. I used to think, oh, he's neglecting us. Oh, he's emotionally unavailable. This is what my dad knew to do. He didn't know how to, I mean, how's he going to learn it? And that's us stuff too. You know, Diana talked about that. The mom I wanted to be, he's holding on to my leg. I don't know. I know. I can. I got to go. I had to go too. Mom and Dad had to go. So Mom and Dad had to drive in front of the tavern and park in the car and leave us out there for God knows how many hours. And, you know, once in a while, throw a piece of beef jerky in the car or something, you know? That's alcoholism. My sister told me this story. I didn't even know this. It was just adorable. You know, my mom was born and raised up in Alaska. My sister's telling me the story. I go, tell me. I don't remember being a little girl in Alaska. I lived there till I was like 3, 4, something like that. And she goes, well, I remember a Christmas. I remember a Christmas where, I mean, this is, it's so weird and it's so reality, but it's part of the story, you know? And my sister says, yeah, Mom made me a doll out of a t-shirt. She tied it. And we had this Christmas tree, and she took some thread, and she threaded marshmallows, and she put it on the Christmas tree. And she goes, it was so pretty. You know, this is the cool stuff that we can go back and we can go, yeah, they were trying. It was love. And I know, in front of a train, yeah. Way back, I mean, Donna H., some of you ladies know Donna H. She was Donna something before that. But I saw her, yeah. What was it? Jay. So, I guess. Sorry. Can't hear that good up here. Sorry. So I'm listening to her. I'm young in sobriety, and I go to the Mount Baker Roundup in Bellingham, and it set me free. She said she stood in front of the... all these women, and I'm new, and she says, I loved and cherished and abused and neglected my kids. Holy moly. Denial in my life was, I loved and cherished those kids, but I never admitted to the fact that you could do all that at the exact same time. I could do it all at the same time. I wanted to swear off with or without a solemn, you know, hideous four horsemen, guilt, you know, all those horrible things that we, this is a collective, a bunch of women here, you know. I don't think I'm the only one in the room that's done that stuff, right? But my little kids, you know, just a little more of my story, or a lot more, whatever happens here. Is I got pregnant when my dad was working in Alaska when I was 18 years old. I took my first drink at 15. It was really glamorous. It was in a bathroom stall at a high school dance. And it was a bottle of MD-2020 that I ripped off at the grocery store. Flat bottle, you know, you can just tuck it in there. And man, oh man, oh man, the first, in the stall, just like we were doing earlier, Amy, when you were trying to cut in front of me, she had to go. So that was it. My first glamorous drink of alcohol was in this bathroom stall, and a bottle of MD-2020, and the first one went down, and I puked in the toilet, and then the second one went down, and boom. See that little girl I was telling you about? The little girl that wasn't like Karen and Kathy, and the little girl that wasn't, had the dirty face, and the, you know, I'm 15 years old now. I'm like, whoa. Whoa. And we talk about an AA all the time. It didn't start as a problem. It was a solution. Because here's the deal. Deep down, this is our deal. We have a spiritual malady. Here, this is where, I mean, I'm showing you my belly here. So, or should suck it in before I do that. But, you know, this is where my disease lies, is it lies in here. I tried to go to my 10-year class reunion, sober, 3 weeks sober, 10-year class reunion. And I was like, if somebody would have said boo, I would have broken a million pieces, right? Why? Because I didn't have a solution. I didn't have a God in my life. I was dry. I hadn't treated the spiritual malady like she's talking about, like Diana was talking about earlier. So I got pregnant at 18 years old. Party, party, party. I look across the room and there's this guy with no shirt on. He's in a fight. And he was really good looking, and it was love at first sight. And I'm not the only one here, I know that for sure. No shirt, this 1970s stretchy corduroys with the elastic in the back. Yeah, he was hot, and he was in a fight. But see, what I'd done all my life was I had been breaking up the fight with mom and dad. My brothers and sisters would send me downstairs. Why? Because I would dance for my dad and I would sing for my mom and I was busy. What do we talk about in our big book? That stuff that talk. I'm the actor trying to direct the show. And I could break up the fights when my brothers and sisters sat upstairs. And so what happens? Fast forward 19 years old or 18 years old. I got a way to get out of the house. I got this guy. I'm knocked up. Dad's in Alaska. And we start having babies, you know. I had Brennan first on Christmas Day, 1979. I had Jake in March of 1981, and I had Jessica in May of 1982. I made it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous November 11th, 1989. That's a long space. But in 1986, I got pregnant for the fourth time. And on that fourth pregnancy, we were really excited because I was doing, I'm full-on alcoholic housewife. I don't even know any different. If you were raised like that, you don't know that that's not normal. I mean, it was just normal for me to be the alcoholic housewife, you know? Once in a while, I'd sneak out and get to a bar, but most of the time, it was like, I don't need that stuff. I mean, it wasn't the way for me. And so I get pregnant with my fourth child, and Jessica's four, Jake is five, and Brandon's six, and I'm pregnant for the fourth time. And I was excited. I was so excited about this baby. Diana, I wish I could say I didn't drink during that one. Or the one pregnancy before. The pregnancy before or the pregnancy before. But guess what my mom did? Same thing. I got a picture of my mom in July 1959 sitting with a cigarette in one hand and a Rainier beer, that's Pacific Northwest beer. And, you know, it's July of 59. I was November of 59. Okay, this is my mom. This is what my mom did. This is what I did. You know, and so I get pregnant with my fourth child and we're really excited about it because there was diapers and bottles and all that. Wrap it. And October 19th, 1986, I gave birth to my son, Brian Daniel. And 3 months later, when I'm with you guys, when I'm with the ladies, it gets more emotional for me, but on January 22nd, 1987, I had started back to work. I was off maternity leave. And my little sister was babysitting my baby boy. And she went in the bedroom to grab him out of bed, and he was purple. And she came running out of the bedroom with Brian in her arms. And I'm 27 years old. I've got three little kids at home. And I don't know what death looks like. I've never lost anybody near me. And the hospital was near. And I'm just like, give him mouth to mouth. Let's go. Give him mouth to mouth. And we get to the hospital and I go running in with Brian in my arms. And the nurse, I hand him over to her, the nurse. And she said, your son is dead. And that day, like, I'm 27 years old. I've got three little kids to take care of. And oh my God, like the darkness was just, you know, any woman that's lost a baby in this room or a child in this room or anything like that in this room, that's a club you really, it sucks to belong to. You know, my son had died of sudden infant death syndrome at my sister's house in the bedroom that day. And it began to be a journey of not enough alcohol to go in my body to kill the pain, other forms of alcohol to go in my body that advanced. And so 1987, Brian dies in January, and in August of 1987, my mom had lung cancer, and my mom died in August of that same year. And I'm like, I'm crazy. Like, all I know is I'm just crazy. There is not enough anything to kill the pain inside my body, and I can't even think back. It took me years of sharing this behind a podium and at meetings or wherever, you know, to understand that there is a God that took care of my children when I couldn't take care of my children. He mothered them when I couldn't. I was all, here's selfishness. I've got three little kids I can barely feed, barely be. You know, and I'm so wrapped up in my pain. My ex-husband, which happened years later, but he completely was gone, you know, in the garage and at the neighbors and gone. And I'm home with these three kids, and all I can do is just try to kill the pain. And so I'm feeling like I'm crazy. I go to this therapist. Her name was Heidi S. I guess I keep her anonymity here. She's not one of us, but, you know, and it was like this deal where God was giving me these warnings. You know, these, like Bill talks on the first page of his story, these ominous warnings. You guys know them. You guys know them. We all have, see, I don't believe, I in no way, shape, or form believe that God just comes in our life when we get to AA and we get on our knees and we do our step three. That's the biggest crock of poo-poo. It just is. People, things happen along the way. And they happen organically. In that step, it says, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. Underline. As we understood Him. What does it say? Honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. It's we, man. It's we. I love the God that shines in your eyes. I love the God that shines in your eyes. I love the God that shines in your eyes. Diane was saying it. You know, I love the God that shines in your eyes. But it might be different than what I do. But see, that was never the case in Alcoholics Anonymous. That was never the case. I walked in, and for the first time in my life, I can tell you every single thing I know to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. To be a mom, to be a wife, to be a friend, to be generous, to be kind, to be giving, to be of service. Do you guys know what all that stuff is? Those are fruits of the Spirit. Those are the things that happen with the power of God. The power of God in this room. Now, I'm telling you, odds here to Vegas. You guys aren't supposed to be here on a Friday night in Atlanta, Georgia, sitting in here. You know? And I believe this too, that we don't... See, if I'm in my obsession, and if I'm in my compulsion, there ain't no human power that's coming after me, and I'm staying. You guys could all try to wrestle me to the ground, but I'm going to find a way to bite my way out, claw my way out, and if Amanda and I were going together, you dang sure we're going. You know, we're going. Something's keeping you there. And it's not just because I have a pretty dress on. Just saying. I feel pretty. I feel fat and pretty at the same time. Okay. And the woman who did my hair for my wedding, like I had my hair and makeup done. I suck at hair and makeup. Oh man, like I was thinking, Leslie's just gonna need to do it for me. Why am I saying that? Because I'm gonna. She did this tutorial on Facebook on doing beach curls, and I tried to do that, man. It just didn't happen, you know. Okay. Super huge sidebar. Okay, got back there. Okay, so Heidi S., I made it back. So Heidi S., I go to see her, and I'm crazy. I'm telling her I lost my son. I lost my mom. I got three little kids to take care of, and I can't do it. My husband's a drug addict. And she tells me something that changed my life. She goes, Marian, well, it changed, but it didn't. It started the process of the change, part of the process of the change. And she said, Marian, when you lose a child, you lose your future. And when you lose a parent, you lose your past. And Marian, you're having trouble living in today. See, in my family, why do we remember this stuff? You know, that was 34 years ago. I don't know what I had for lunch. Oh yeah, I had a Caesar salad. You know, but seriously, I don't remember that stuff, but these things that happen, these moments of clarity, you know, times you drive home and you go, how the heck did I ever make it? Oh my God, is there guts on the grill of the car? You know, whatever. And so then another thing was, so this huge family that I have is riddled with alcoholism. Surprise, surprise. So, but part of that was I had this little brother that lived under a bridge, and he used to take his form of alcohol into his arms. And I was always like, because what I did with my kids, regardless, I loved them and I cherished them and I abused them and I neglected them. But they had clean towels and clean socks and a trampoline and an above ground $500 swimming pool. And those were the things I was doing. See, on the outside, to me, I was doing great. But on the inside, I was dead. See, this is where that thing happens. It doesn't happen outside, how much, how often, all that stuff. It happens in here. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, right? So my little sister's doing little pills and drinking in the morning. My big sister, she's like into Bob Marley and the things that he does that are green. And, you know, and my brother's, you know, got the stuff going in his arm and all that stuff. So my outsides are looking good. I'm thinking and I don't, you know, whatever. But this one time, my brother would steal stereos and stuff and he'd bring them to my house. He'd go, yeah, do you want to buy it? So we could get more stuff. And I was always, do. And he said, one of these days, you're going to take a good, long, hard look in the mirror. November 11th, 1989. The moment that I saw something for the very first time. The moment. That's a G-O-D moment. That's the gift we have to have here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe, is that gift of desperation. I was desperate, I was broken, and I was at a bottom, and I was at a place of surrender. And from that place, now see, I believe, old timers used to say this, that, you know, God loves drunks because we're fun to watch, you know? And, you know, He just does. He cares for us when we're out there. He cares for us. I was sitting in a detox one night, and there was, I was bringing a friend to detox, and there's these two drunk women, and they're crying together, and they're hugging each other, and it's like, that's the love of one drunk for another. If we're not fist fighting, we're hugging, you know, we kind of are, right? Telling our worries and woes to the bartender, right? Louis and whoever, right? So crazy. And so I got the gift of desperation November 11th, 1989, the day after my 30th birthday. I got drunk twice that day. I didn't know it was coming the next day. I went out and I had this 80s perm, and it looked more like it was all matted, and I put on a leopard print shirt to go out and party that night. And the next day was the gift of sobriety that I didn't know was coming. I didn't know what was coming. And I went downstairs to my bright pink bathroom, and I looked in the mirror and I saw something I never saw before. See, because that little brother of mine that lived under the bridge said, one of these days you're going to take a good, long, hard look in the mirror. Oh my God, it happened. So I went to a 30-day spin dry at St. Joe's, Bellingham, Washington. And I believe I needed that physical separation. You know, we don't go to hospitals anymore. I mean, I guess I went to hospitals a lot back then, but, you know, but I worked my first three steps there. And I worked them with an outside person that came in from the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll never forget this step as long as I live. We go out for a walk in the morning. And after my step three, it's November and it's crisp and it's Washington State and it's Bellingham. And God, those leaves on the trees were red and they're gold and they're brown and they're orange. And I could see it. I could see it. And with all my little rehab friends, my new besties for life, we're going to stay sober forever. Yes! We'd swing on these swings, and I felt like a little girl, and I felt like I was free, and I felt like I was going to be safe. That was God. See, guys, this is the deal. I don't have to have your God. You don't have to have my God. This is the deal. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. That's the how. That's in. Right? And so where step three is in the big book is it talks about, I love this. You know, we read it at the beginning of all our meetings. And I remember. And I remember so well at the beginning. I would sit there and they'd read how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are those who cannot or will not completely give themselves to a simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They're such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have born that way. There are some with grave emotional and mental disorders. And I always thought, oh, those poor suckers. Grave emotional and mental disorders. I have it. I have a grave emotional and mental disorder. I have a disease that will settle for me drunk but wants me dead. 32 years later, does not matter. Must be rid of self. What did she just read when Luana was reading that? I mean, it's so beautiful. You know what blows my mind about that? Most of that is we see where we can contribute to life. Did you ever use the word contribute to life? Let me see how I can contribute. Seriously. never crossed my mind when I was drinking. See if you can contribute to my life. See how you can contribute to my life. My friend Alfred Taylor used to say, and he's in the big meeting in the sky, you know, I might not be much, but I'm all I ever think about. But see, what I found out too about that selfishness and self-centeredness, even though if I'm sitting there and I'm thinking I'm not enough, I'm still thinking about me. Dear God. And then if I'm thinking, Northwest Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, my first home group, 20 years I was in that group. I mean, now I'm in Alcoholics and God in Fort Lauderdale. Did I say that at the beginning? I had my first job there. C.B. McLaren had a flat top and a warty alcoholic nose. And I can use his first and last name because he's another one up there. First at one ever that reached out his hand. See, this is my story. It's our stories. They're God's story. This is how it happens. With a mustard seed of willingness, something cracked open that door. And hope was born that maybe I could be like Leslie. She's my roommate this weekend. How cool is that? You know, I can have friends like Amy and Luann. I can be with you. And I can say I messed up and screwed up. And my husband says this. He says, you know, we're the only ones we're the only ones that can tell each other the most god-awful, horrible stories about each other and then say, here's my number, give me a call. I mean, when I made it in the door and CB said, hi, Marion. Oh my God, the president of Alcoholics Anonymous knows my name. I have arrived, you know. Go to a business meeting, I get to wash the ashtrays. Heck yeah. Yeah, those are my ashtrays, metal ashtrays. And they were soapy, and they were dirty, and I'd gripe about it. But I was a part of the Northwest Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had a job, and it was my job. And things like that began to happen. You know, this is, you know, story. That's what God does. I believe that God just writes these stories on our hearts, writes these moments on our heart. Why? Because faith without works is dead, right? We know. I don't know if you guys are like me. You know, I this Pete the real alcoholic used to say this. He used to say, you know, if you're hungry, you better go get a job. It's not like God's just going to throw a weenie through your window. These are my teachers, can I say, you know. Chain smoking his cigarettes. Get off the cross, we need the wood, you know. These are my people. These are my people, and they're still my people, and it is. And you know, after I did that first third step, see, this thing was still working. I'm in treatment, you know. That was working. And I went to a meeting, and it was a Friday night. I'm regressing, but I'll go back, I promise, I hope. You know, I go to this meeting, and this mind's going, oh, great, Friday night, and you're a dry dock. Cool. You know, the floors are like this, the radiator's clanking, you know, billows of smoke in the air, and this is where my life had become on a Friday night. And I am an absolute believer that God puts angels in our life, because there was a woman sitting on that church bench at Dry Dock, a Native American woman. Never saw her again. Don't know if I ever will see her again. She told my story. She said it. She said it out loud, the stuff I said inside that I felt inside. She said it. See, that's God. God is we understand it. And you know, our job is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. To grow. You know, I have a relationship with God today. It's been tried and it's been tested, and I get full of that 100 forms of fear. And I get, you know, caught in a, what does it say? 7 areas of self. When you hurt my pride, when you hurt my security, when you hit my pocketbook, when you hit my self-esteem, oh my God, when you hit those places, I gotta be free of that. Why? Because I can't be of service. I can't contribute to life when I'm doing that. And then what happens when I'm full of self, and I'm full of self-pity, and I'm full of this self, 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 and then the sponsee calls, the last thing I want to do is pick up that phone. But the absolute first thing I need to do is pick up that phone. And sometimes I live pretty vulnerable with my sponsees, and I know that's step 12, but, you know, whereas I thank God you called. You know, the sponsee that makes your hair blow back when you answer the phone. It's like... it's like, whoa. It's like you can almost feel the wind behind it. It's like, holy... it's her, you know? But... and it's always at the absolute wrong moment. Why is it the wrong moment, though? Because I'm thinking about me in that moment. Oh, man. This is when God showed me something really cool. I was freaking out about some disaster in my life. You know how we just freak out about these stupid disasters and nothing is actually... you go, God, I had a heck of a week last week. And somebody asks you, well, what happened? I don't remember now. But I was having a moment. I was ticked off about something. And old blow your hair back calls... and my phone's in my hand, and I'm not going to answer that. I am not answering the phone. Hello. But guess what, guys? These shoulders were up like this. I was tensed up like a ball. I was all about myself. I'm absolutely freaking out. It's crazy. She calls, I don't want to listen. Freedom from the bondage of self. The fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. The beautiful fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You've made me free of me. There seems no way to do this without God's help. See, I need God with skin on. I need Christy to hold on. I need to hold on to you guys. I need to touch you guys. I needed a cup of coffee tonight, Beth. And now sometimes my relationship with God looks like this. I live in South Florida, poor me. You know. And I can have conversations with God. I've learned that needs to be very... there's some rituals and beautiful things I do in my relationship with God that are very precious and sacred and beautiful to me. But sometimes I just got to get ticked off at Him. A really good way to do that is have a good cry and a scream when you're riding a bike, because the endorphins and the tears, try that one. Ooh, baby. And this one time I'm having this out with God, because that's... God doesn't make hard turns for those who seek Him. He's not looking for us. Alcoholics Anonymous, guys, we don't have to clean up, shine up, and go like Karen and Kathy. God just says, come.
Why
Yeah? Yeah. Come on. And I'm mad, and I'm going to have a discussion with my best friend. I'm going to have a discussion with this God. I'm down at the beach, and I'm ticked, and I rode my bike, and I'm crying. And I go running out in the ocean, and I'm not finished with Him yet. I'm not done. And I'm just talking. No, I wasn't. I was yelling. And the lifeguard blows the whistle. Hey, lady! Because see, he thought I was some crazy woman out there. The whistle's blowing. You know, ooh. But see, that's how real it can be. You guys, because you guys taught me that. It's mine. My relationship with God is mine, and your relationship with God is yours. And don't let anybody tell you how to have your relationship with God. If you're sitting here and you're sober, man, God's working in your life. God's working in your life. How about that power? You know, I was a worship leader in a Pentecostal church, and you know, I felt God, and I moved in God, and oh, do-do-do-do, and all that stuff. And then I went through a divorce, and things got funky, and they didn't like me very much. God bless them, it's all healed, and it's beautiful. And I would sing and play guitar in my house all by myself, in my apartment, when I got out of that marriage. It was a domestic violence marriage, and I got out. 2004. And it was me and my guitar and God and an air mattress and a suitcase. God doesn't make too hard of terms for those who seek Him. He was there. See, what am I doing publicly tonight? I'm talking about my favorite subject in the world. My favorite topic in the world. My husband, now I get to say that again, likes to talk about that. You know, there's just as much God in me as there is that guy on the street corner with that sign in his hands. Just as much God. See, Alcoholics Anonymous taught me, that Northwest group taught me. I don't remember who said it. I'm no better than anybody else in this room. And I'm no worse than anybody else in this room.
Yeah.
Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to look the world in the eye. To look in the eye. That's God. That's love. And sometimes I can touch on that I may be okay. And sometimes I can touch on, thank God you did that in me. Thank God you made me answer that phone. Thank God you gave me the blow the hair back girl. You know? Thank God. And how am I doing for time, Lee? 20 minutes? Holy cow. I won't go 20 more. Maybe not. Relieve me from the bondage of self. So I get sober and those kids are going to AA and they're drinking, making their own coffee in the kitchen. With however many packages of sugar. They know CB. I can talk about CB. And my first sponsor, Kathy, who got diagnosed with cancer. And she had three little kids. And I got to experience walking my sponsor through that. See, when Mom died, I was drunk. When Kathy died, I was sober. And her kids, that's 32 years ago, her kids are my kids, my kids. Art, we got married, right? And Art wanted to be at the wedding, so he sees these wedding pictures of ours on Facebook, or shouldn't say it, can you say that on the phone? But He photoshopped himself into all the pictures, you know. It was so sweet. It was so, so sweet. And you know, Kathy would do this. This is what she'd do with me, my sponsor, my first sponsor. She's dying of cancer. I've got, you know, a broken shoelace and I'm freaking out. And I stopped calling her because I'm not going to bug her. What does she do? She calls me, "Don't you deny me my sobriety by not calling me."
Yeah.
Don't you. So if you think if you're new here and you think if you call your sponsor, you're bugging her, you're saving her. And you're saving her. And I know that's step 12, but it's still God stuff, right? So here's the deal that came from blow the hair back was that I realized, I read this book every morning that I got in the mail on a God day when things were really bad in my marriage. I got this book from a very beautiful lady called God Calling, and it just happened to be in my mailbox one day when I was having a really, 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 really horrible bad day, and it just showed up in my mailbox. Wonderful lady who just had a real tragic loss in her life recently. And so I know today what happened. The blow your hair back situation happened. And God says, "That's me calling." See, we can hear God. But see, when we hear God, he sounds like Beth, you know. He sounds like Angie. He sounds like Mary. You know, he sounds like us. Or she sounds like us. You know, the Pentecostal thing I was talking about. So I started getting a little self-righteous there for a while. I was like, I go to AA meetings. It's like, ooh, they just need to have my brand of God, you know. Ow. And then the marriage is dying. Why? Because of alcoholism. And I was selfish. And I threw myself back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I was dying behind that. And I went to this house of my beautiful AA friends. And Marinette and David. And they were Buddhists. And their whole mantle was covered with that. And I walked in and I got judgy for a little bit, guys. I promise you, I came back to AA and God and everything. But it was a moment. Sometimes we can get that. Spiritual pride can come behind some of this stuff. Oh, everybody go to so-and-so, because after all, she's got a big God. Well, you just got the same amount in you. Right? And I walked in that room and I was like, oh my God, that's there. And the next thing in my gut said, I'm here. God's here. As he talks about, God is either everything or he's nothing. I'm a hap. I love to add this line. What happened there? God is everything or he's nothing, or God is everywhere or he's nowhere. And I believe that with my whole heart. I'm here. Why would God just speak that to my heart? I hear it. It happened. And it wasn't audible. I'm here. You know, it's not like that. No, it's just the hunch, the voice, the thing. We guys, we hear it. Put the grocery cart back. Restrain a pen and tongue. You know, sin. Yes. Oh, that's so bad. Can't take that back. Oh my God, I'm so glad there wasn't social media in 1989. You newbies that are in here, God bless you. You got a whole nother level of emotional sobriety going on. And I'm proud of you. I'm very, very proud of you. It's huge. So I'm going to kind of not go 20, but I am going to wrap it up with this. And I hope that this makes some sense to you, as it has to me. I have a friend, Karen, up in Jersey. And, man, she did, and some of you probably, I'm sure Debbie knows this because she's that cool. picking on her, so great. Not picking, loving on you. It's a love fest. So she was breaking down the third step prayer to me one night. And I was like, wow. Wow. So, oh my God. And don't let me forget to say, okay, I'll remember that. So she was explaining to me the third step prayer. Because here's the deal. It's kind of like an Eckhart Tolle kind of thing. And here's the deal. Our third step prayer says this. Follow me. Okay? So we have to be rid of the self. Or it kills us, right? Well, guess what? If we got rid of self, what's left? Me. You. Right? This is so cool. I love this. So, God, I offer myself to thee. Have it. Have all that stinking self. Fear, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, sloth, all of it. Just take it. 100 forms of fear, take it. Just take it. God, I offer myself to thee. To build with me. And to do with me as thou wilt. Not what self wants to do, but as what God wants, right? Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, not self's difficulties, because self's difficulties are a whole lot. Who doesn't hear that? First thing my husband says is too, who doesn't? You wake up in the morning and you're already in a fight with somebody from 5 years ago. You know? It's like, you haven't even had your coffee and the chatter's already happening, right? God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. So that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. What? See, I'm not, so our disease is this. It's in the medical dictionary. We have a mental illness. And what is it? It doesn't come in a bottle. Our alcoholism doesn't come in a bottle. It comes in all these forms of self and fear and the actor directing the show and all this stuff. That's self. Right? So if that goes, then I'm here. Okay, I hope that makes some sense. And if it doesn't, pass it on. I mean, this is what Karen says. I'm giving her the credit, right? But here's a cool thing that... This might be mine, but I probably stole it somewhere, borrowed it, or thought of it. I don't know. So guess what? So here's the deal. I've been sober, I think, a long time, but not as long as some of these beautiful ladies here. You know, I've been sober a little minute, as the cool people say these days. But I was thinking about this one day. So deep down inside every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. God's here. God's here, right? Inside. So have you ever noticed that when you get goosebumps and you're outside and you're cold, you get goosebumps from the outside. But where do God bumps come from? God bumps come from the inside. I don't know where I got it from. But here's the evidence that it's God, in each one of us, that it's different and it's cool. Because I bet you, me and Amanda could listen to some Garth Brooks and we would have some goosebumps. And there might be some of that just like, oh, I want that country music. I want some hip hop. I want some R&B, Aretha Franklin. And that's a good too. You know what I'm saying? But we all watch Hallmark commercials and we get goosebumps. I mean us, this room, women, right? Isn't that so a thing that gives me that might be different than the thing that gives you that. But collectively, it's God. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So, Lee, I'm not going that much longer. Okay? I found this feather today on my walk. Isn't it pretty? And I used to work with women a lot and say, we were just in this feather season, and I found this feather, and I was working with this girl, and we did her third step, and all of a sudden, two feathers just came floating down. Two, they were hooked to each other. And then we're like, wow, Rachel, did you see that? Yeah, wow, grab the two feathers. And then it happens again, and there was two more. Like, I don't know. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is, what my friend Craig said at the Northwest group. God don't make no junk. And we're all God's kids. And you're enough. My little, oh shoot, I had this therapist. She was like 4'10". At St. Joe's Hospital, her name was Allison, and she used to scare the living daylights out of me when she'd walk in the room. And she'd make me make these little post-it notes and hang them on the mirror. I am enough. And so I want to say that to you today. If you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and you have God inside of you, you are enough. And I just have nothing else to say. Thanks, ladies. Thank you.